The third group of data that we're going to have you pull for your listing interview are actually the failed listings. Let's call those the expired, withdrawn, canceled, whatever your marketplace you call, things that didn't sell and the realtor didn't get paid. Just call them failed listings. This is our third group. You notice we haven't even pulled sold yet because the buyer's perspective are the actives. The under contracts are the future solds, and better yet, they're the ones who met their match. They're done looking. So the faileds are actually the most therapeutic part of the presentation you could do with a home seller because they're more curious about the properties that didn't sell than those that did. It's kind of like if you were going to open up a convenience store, a 7-Eleven or White Hen Pantry or a Walgreens, whatever you were going to open up. And they paraded out in front of you 10 successes, people who made lots of money. What I want to do, I want to meet those that didn't succeed to find out what went wrong. There's so much more people leaning in, literally during a listing presentation, when you start showing failed listings, because the seller's going to say, really? I thought that house sold 180 days with XYZ company. What happens also when you show a failed listing? High days in the market of your competitor. Never your own company's failed listings, okay? But if you show XYZ and say, they're a good company, but why do you think it didn't sell? The seller interviewed XYZ an hour before you got there. And XYZ talked about how they're marketing geniuses, but they didn't show the failed listings. You want to eliminate your competitor nicely? Just show your competitor's results. We're not being mean. We're just trying to inform the seller that some houses don't sell. And we want to know why they think. So again, actives, we want to find out why the seller thinks that house hasn't sold yet based on high days in the market. Under contracts, we want to find out what the seller thinks the property would have sold for based on 97 days in the market, it's under contract. What do you think it's sold for? The expireds, we want to ask the seller, why do you think it didn't sell at all? It's very therapeutic to watch the seller in this case. In fact, one of the spouses, if there's two of them, will look at the one who's in charge. And he looks over at her when the question is asked. And you now know who is making the decision. The goal here is watching them through this presentation to say, who's our decision maker? You might assume it's one spouse, and it's actually the other. And they're going to reveal it without you saying, who's the decision maker here? You'll see that when you put a piece of paper in front of them, a comp, an active, if they pull it toward them and the other one just starts to listen. And the one who's listening but is not the decision maker, still has an opinion and may not like what you're saying and wants to go with their other friend who's a realtor. So it's very important that you know who is going to make this decision. Is it really unified that they say, give us a minute, we're going to talk about this together? Or is there a dominant spouse there who's really the decision maker? Believe it or not, that's part of your job. You're not a marketing genius, despite what we realtors call. In the 1980s, when I became a realtor, you had two things you could put on your business card: marketing specialist or relocation specialist. Since I didn't know what a relocation specialist was, I thought, oh, I must be a marketing specialist. Well, none of us are. We put the property in the MLS at the right price. It's going to sell no matter if you're the greatest mega agent in that state or this is your first deal. The buyers are going to come. We all know they're going to come. Pricing it right in the MLS is so important. Back to the properties that failed. You're putting it in front of the seller, the expired listings, ideally from the subdivision. If you have to leave, go within a 2-mile radius, find similar price, similar style, and we're just going to circle and highlight the differences, the remarkable differences the other property had that we don't have. We're going to ask the seller, this one took 309 days. It was with XYZ company, again, a good firm. If it was asking $550, it's an important question to ask the seller. There's only a few questions on each of these statuses. For the expired listing, the important question is the property that is, it failed to sell at 302 days on the market. If they were $550, what should it have been priced at? And they're saying 5.25. So you're saying this other property, if it was selling, if it was sold, it had to be down to 5.25. What they're doing is they're actually setting the price for their property without knowing they're doing that. And then we can say, well, obviously, my next question is, this house is superior or inferior, right? The buyers always get a vote, and the buyers clearly voted on these failed properties. They voted to pass. And I'm sure that seller came on the market optimistic that their house was going to sell, just like you. And they hired XYZ, who has more offices than anybody else does in this area. Nobody has any more offices than XYZ. But three of these failed properties, and I have six of them here. Three of them were with XYZ. I'm not saying it's a bad company, but this one's 302 days on the market. This one's 198, and this one's 107. Two questions here. Is the property superior or inferior? And in this failed listing at 302 days, if it failed at 550, what should it have been? And when the seller says probably 5.25, what they've just done is they've manufactured a comp. They decided on what that house would sell for. Bob and Sally got one more property here. This one was $575,000, 197 days on the market with XYZ company. And the same question, it was 575 at 100 and blah, blah days on the market. What should it have been listed for? Now, they're going to say a number. And what they're doing is they're actually framing where their property should be versus before you walked in the door where they thought it was going to be. And you were coming in to talk about your brand. And what a waste of time that is when the most important part of our job is pricing, because I don't care if you're the number one agent in the country. The buyers still get a vote. Nobody cares about the color of the sign in the front yard, whose name's on the sign in the front yard. Am I right? Or do buyers go, oh, I don't recognize that brand. Honey, drive on. We don't, you know, we've been looking in this school district for 3 years and we want to buy on this street. That's the floor plan we want, but we don't recognize the brand. So let's drive on. Let's not make an appointment. That obviously is ridiculous. So the color of the sign in the front yard actually doesn't really matter to the buyer. The buyer doesn't care about the brand. The seller cares about the brand. Why? Because they think the buyer cares about it. We can remove their thought process on the brand at all. Because, and if you're a big brand and you're saying, well, I don't want to do that. Well, the other guy, the little guy, is going to beat you. Because they're actually talking about what the seller wants to talk about. The price of the property. The money that they're going to get. And do you know how to deliver it? So the priority here, again, is start with the pricing presentation. Do the marketing presentation second, if you even do it. And I've coached agents who just didn't need to do it any longer. They had no need because the seller was convinced you're the one. You have the knowledge of the area. You've demonstrated it. They've never seen anything like this before. And so many agents I've coached haven't even used the marketing binder any longer. That might have got you in the door, the brand name, but it's your insight to the marketplace that eliminates the competitor and gives the seller's mind at ease. Because that's what our job is, put their mind at ease. So they believe you that they are 550, not 600,000. And it's just walking through the actives, the under contracts, the faileds. And we're going to go to our last group, the solds, in just a moment. We do a quick recap here on the expired listings, the failed, withdrawns, whatever they are. You're going to ask them, this house was $160,000. Good company, XYZ. Why didn't it sell? And what price should it have been? If they were $160,000, guys, and it's your same square footage, it took 200 days to fail, what price do you think it should have been? It had a new kitchen. What price do you think it should have been at? And they say, 150? Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. That house had been listed for 150, that house would have been a sold comp, not an expired comp. And slowly but surely, without ever showing sold properties, the seller has probably told you their price. It's a game of high-low. They're no higher than this, and they're no lower than that. So, in any case, let's move on to solds.